Hey everybody, welcome to Current Events, the podcast about what two random guys on the internet are watching on television. Right now we are digging into science fiction TV. We're doing the Star Trek Discovery program. Currently we're doing Star Trek Discovery. We're on episode eight now?
Yes, episode eight.
If you want peace, prepare for war. I'm not even trying to say it in Latin.
Yes.
But that's where parabellum comes from, the name of the ammunition.
Yes.
Prepare for war. So let's see. Let me grab my notes here and let's talk about what happened in this episode.
Sure. You want me to redo a recap while you're
grabbing
your
notes?
Yeah,
do the recap. I'm
okay.
Ready to go.
Yes. Episode 8, only rated a 6.8, and I understand why. The USS Discovery is tasked with a high-priority mission to the planet Pavo and learn the science behind the Klingons' cloaking technology. I don't know if they actually learned the science behind the Klingons' cloaking technology.
Yeah, also, that doesn't adequately describe the episode,
but
that's
not
pretty
at all
typical of IMDb.
Yes.
You know, first of all, I would have rated it higher. I enjoyed the episode. It did kind of have the feeling of a let's set something up that's going to happen next week episode.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, but even the ending specifically.
It's like, yeah. So, it was interesting. It was good. I always like whenever Saru and Tilly get to play key parts, and they both did in this episode. So that was good.
Yep.
So we open with a battle where we have six Klingon ships against one Federation ship, which makes me wonder how the Klingons always manage to isolate a single ship and swarm it.
Yes.
And that's my note here is there a mole? Yeah. And the next question is Ash Tyler?
Yeah. Well, they certainly have the right strategy, you know.
Yes. They do not go for a stand-up fight. They basically find, you know, it's the wolf pack.
Yes.
Plan, right? Is you just want to slice one off the edge of the herd and surround it and overwhelm it.
Yep. Well, they do have the advantage here. Also, is that they are on the offense, and so they get to choose their place and commit their forces. And the Federation appears to be on the defense. They've got people scattered all over the place trying to defend stuff. And
it reminds me of Vietnam,
yeah.
Right? So it was an entirely defensive war, essentially, right? We were never going to go into North Vietnam,
yep.
Right? So they could basically just, you know, withdraw over the border, and then, you know, then they could pick another target, come down. We just had to defend the entire country.
Yep.
And that's kind of the situation that that the Federation has put itself in, that Starfleet is in. And their only real secret weapon here is the Discovery's ability to get anywhere almost instantaneously.
Yep.
The problem with that is that the Klingons now have a secret weapon, which is their cloaking technology.
Yep.
And they're using it effectively, and even the Discovery cannot save the ship that they come to save in the cold open.
Yep, and can't be everywhere. And
right, and we find out, you know, afterwards when Captain Lorca is talking to Starfleet Command that this is the third ship that they've lost.
Yes.
Right. So, to me, this really reeks of information leakage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, otherwise they would not be able to just constantly find these, you know, these Federation ships on their own. Right. So, yeah, it's kind of like the submarine wolf packs in World War II. You know, being able to just sit on the shipping lanes and wait for someone to come, and then they would just, you know, take as many down as they could and disappear.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's a really sort of a downbeat opener.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we get a little bit more downbeat when we cut to the to engineering, and we see that Stamets is really having trouble.
Yep.
He's also returned to his bitchy, sort of angry self.
Yes. Yeah, he comes out and this is a key line here that we will discover later. Is it's like he comes out and he says to Tilly, "What are you doing down here, Captain?"
Yeah,
and she is completely baffled by this.
Yeah.
He's clearly not thinking clearly, and it's great though because Stamets is clearly under a lot of stress.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, it's taking its toll on him just like it did on the tardigrade. So.
Now, my reading of that was that he was seeing the future for a moment, or that he had been to a future where Tilly was captain.
Mm. Yep. Because so, she's been trying to get there.
Right. Yeah, that's her whole plan, you know, at this point. She's a cadet right now, so she's got a long way to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he's, you know, he's been popping around time and space, and he probably knows that, you know, he's seen her as a captain somewhere.
Yep.
So, I always put you in a really difficult position when I make these guesses because you can't tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Oh, no, that's the fun part. I just get to sit here and grin.
yeah, exactly.
Like maybe he is on the head and maybe he's completely out in left field.
But exactly.
We'll find out.
But that's the fun of a show like this, you know, where they don't tell you everything right away.
Yep.
So the main mission of this episode is that this journey to Pavo, where they want to essentially this entire planet rings with a particularly powerful frequency.
Yep.
And it has a naturally occurring, they think, antenna that broadcasts this song into the universe.
Yep.
And what they want to do is use it as a sort of like a sonar type.
High-tech sonar, yep.
Right, so it's, you know, like we were just talking about submarines, right? Mm-hmm. So they want to use it as sonar so that they can decloak the Klingon ships. And what they scan and they find no sentient life forms. And I don't think they even found any mammalian life forms.
Nope.
Yeah, so it's just plants down there. And everything vibrates with this particular frequency. So they beam down Tyler, Burnham, and Saru. And they almost immediately get into trouble because Saru has a problem with the sound the planet is making. It's driving him crazy.
Yes.
And but one of the best lines written in the episode comes about this time when Burnham is explaining the Kelpian way to Ash Tyler, and Saru says, and they particularly enjoy being spoken about in the third person while present. But it's true that he can run at around 50 miles an hour.
I thought they said 80 kilometers.
80 kilometers, about 48 miles an hour, yeah. Right? So, yeah, that's pretty quick.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So that's funny, right? Because that's exactly what they were bred for.
Yep. Yes. Well, yeah. Running away.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So, but once they get there, a creature, let's call it, made of, I thought, like glowing pollen. Right. So, yep. Or dots of energy or something forms around them and attempts to communicate with them. And Saru's the universal translator doesn't work, but Saru's empathic capability, as a prey animal, comes into play, and he can understand them rudimentarily.
Yes.
Rudimentarily.
That word, yes.
Oh my God, that word does not even sound like English.
Rutabagally.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And then we cut over to a really interesting scene. Laurel, female Klingon.
Oh, yeah, they're cutting back and forth to her a lot, but yes.
Yeah, well, she's, and you had said this before, that she plays a really important role, and we're beginning to see that play out with this episode. Mm-hmm. She does something I'm still not really sure about. Well, okay, so let's just take it by turns. So in any case, she presents herself to Cole, the leader of the Klingon, Klingons who were at war, and says that she wants to volunteer her house and all this sort of stuff.
Yep, but wants access to the cloaking and offers to be his interrogator.
Right, yes, but Cole is smarter than Volk was, and he's like, you know, show me something and I'll think about it, right? So she says, okay, I'm going to go interrogate the prisoner who turns out to be the admiral that they captured.
Of course.
In an illegal act of war. and so then we cut back to the planet, and it turns out that the pollen creature is basically sentient. and that the entire planet is essentially a sentient being. All the life is in a symbiotic state on the planet. And when that happens, it kicks the first contact protocols into place, and it changes their mission. They
General
can no longer
Order
just
one.
They can't just use the antenna. They have to get permission from the host. So then we cut back, and Laurel pretends to torture the admiral so that she can get rid of the guard outside, and then asks for asylum. That was interesting. So do you, well, let's see, it's hard for me to ask this question because you already know the truth, probably. But I did not know, I could not tell if this was a ploy of some kind, or, because it went terribly wrong. If it was a ploy of some kind, or if she was literally despondent because she'd lost Takuvma and Voke and Volk, you know, all of this.
She even said, like, Voke is lost. Why do you want to defect? You know, why do you want to defect? And she's, she says, because Voke is lost to me. We've lost Takuvma. You know, I don't get any respect around here. Basically. And she wants to, but she wants to go to Discovery, which makes it, I agree. This is, you could read this either way. She could be, trying to, this could be an attempt, because they know that Discovery is the one secret weapon that the Federation has, and they really want to find out about it. And so this could be her trying to double agent her way in. Or it could be a sincere, you know, attempt to get out of the bad situation, because clearly, you know, things are, we'll see, later in the episode. It's a great tension there, because you don't know, and we won't know, at least for another episode or two, what happens there. We also get Ash in there, actually becoming more personable, even though you don't trust him. He, you know, he's like talking about a lake house and he's grilling trout, and, you know, Michael Burnham gets sucked into his, you know, his charisma, and they finally make their connection, and you know, that, so that's like, what is going on here? You know, you want to really question Ash, but they're really, really trying to make him out to be a sincere character here.
They really are. They're doing everything they can to make us think he's not a spy. And you know, just the harder they try, the less I trust him. But we did get an interesting piece of information from Burnham in that exchange, is that when the war is over, she goes to prison for life. For mutiny. Now, I, you know, find that hard to, you know, would believe that it would actually play out that way, simply because she's, you know, such, being such a help to the war effort.
But,
and others have gotten away with more, you know.
And even more, we will find out later. Anyway, but you keep those cards and letters coming, folks. And another nice little interlude here is when Tilly interrogates Stamets.
She really had a moment in this episode, which was good because she was not in it much. So she confronts Stamets, and this is also kind of a new side of her, which is nice, is she's a little bit bolder than she has been in the past, right?
Well,
she's,
Burnham is rubbing off on her.
She's blossoming under Burnham's mentorship. Right, so she basically pushes and refuses to leave until he tells her what's going on.
And he admits to getting disoriented, and he has a great comeback. It's like, what am I supposed to do? I can't tell the doctor. If I do and he reports it, they take me off to a lab somewhere. Discovery screwed. If he doesn't report it, he gets, you know, court-martialed or something. So he's got to eat it. He can't tell the doctor about it. The doctor, who also happens to be his partner, you know, to make it even worse. So it's just a great human situation where there is no win here. There's not this, you know, usual, oh, you just go tell the doctor and everything will be fine. Not the case.
His problem reminds me of Alzheimer's, right? Because he basically gets unstuck in time, and he doesn't know where he is, and when he is, you know, and then he'll sort of snap back for a moment, you know. So, yeah, it's very interesting. We don't know what effect this is having on him. Now, I disagreed with the fact that he would be taken to a lab because they have exactly one way to use Discovery, and that's with him.
Yes. Yep.
Right. So now it would probably happen afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's in this Michael Burnham conundrum. It's like, yeah, I can help now. Everything will be fine now. But after this, I get dissected. You know,
yeah. So and it was funny because, you know, Ash Tyler's response to Burnham was, well, then we won't end the war.
Yes.
Which I thought it was really interesting. And he also has some more stuff later that he says that could indicate what's going on with him.
Yep.
But for now, so Laurel tries to sneak the Admiral out.
Yeah, there's an interesting thing in there that she interrogates the Admiral a little bit about what happens to prisoners in the Federation.
Mm-hmm.
She's actually playing this up really well, you know, and the Admiral says no death penalty. And, you know, so there's this interesting dialogue there, which makes her, if she is being disingenuous, she's doing if Laurel's being disingenuous, she's doing a very good job of it.
And also the thing is, the way that her plan goes to hell, right,
mm-hmm.
and she ends up with a vendetta against Cole, we will never really know whether she had intended to defect or not, because once she sees her dead friends, which we'll get to later, that's it. I'm going to wear his head on a pike, you know.
Yeah.
So she redoubles her efforts to basically, you know, take down Cole rather than defect, if she in fact did intend to defect. One thing we kind of skipped over there, or I skipped over, was the fact that the planet noise is starting to drive Saru out of his mind.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a sort of an interaction with the Pavan pollen creature where it sort of flows into Saru and reads his mind,
mm-hmm.
and then gives him peace. Gives him silence, yes, and peace. And so then he comes in to talk to Tyler and Burnham and says,
I've been enlightened.
let me have your communicators, which is just like, you know, and this may actually be the case that, you know, if you live in a society that's fairly utopian, like the Federation, mm-hmm. right, you would be a lot more trusting than people like us living in a duplicitous world, you know.
Yes.
Nothing but one traitor after another betraying us, you know. So they're like, oh, okay, here you go. And then he crushes them,
which was perfect, and then drops them on the ground, and it's everything's fine. We'll
you
all be happy. You know, they've invited them to remain. You know, he is like enthralled, no doubt. It's just like, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. But
yeah, he's that friend of yours that gets involved in a cult.
Yes,
you know, and tries to tell you how great it is, and you're just like, whoa, buddy, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, yeah. But at least they realize really quickly. Yeah, okay, Saru has been compromised. As soon as he leaves, Ash goes, okay, I'm senior officer. I'm taking command now.
Right, and you know what I think is funny is that this is really an Easter egg for that original series episode with the flowers that shot the spores.
Mm-hmm.
into Spock's face, and he was, I'm happy, Jim.
Yes.
You know. So, you know, that's pretty cool.
Yep.
So then we cut back to the Klingon ship of the dead, and Laurel is trying to sneak the Admiral out, we think.
Yes.
And then,
well, because she mentioned something about having a shuttle that she could, mm-hmm. you know, escape in, and
yeah, and then, but she gets caught by Cole, and there's a really interesting exchange between her and the Admiral, and she says to the Admiral, you're not what I expected,
mm-hmm.
and she says, you're not either, and then she grabs her sword and attacks her with it, and then ends up, I think, being killed.
Yeah, getting smashed up against the electrical sockets there or whatever.
And
the bug zapper, it looked to me like.
Yeah, that's right.
A human zapper.
Well, if they leave those dead bodies lying around, they probably do have a fly problem.
Yes.
So, So, I'll just ask you right now, is the Admiral dead?
No.
Okay, all right. All right, so
that's one spoiler. You got one.
Okay.
Spoiler.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't make sense that she was dead, you know. But anyway, things really went to hell.
Yes.
And she just got dragged off to a room full of corpses and left there. And then Laurel went back to talk to Cole and pledged her fealty to him. And he pretended to.
Yes.
Well, actually, let's hold on.
Yeah,
a second.
Well, there's a bunch in between there, but yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. So, so fakes killing her, whatever happened there, and then we cut back to Tyler trying to delay Saru.
And he actually does a pretty good job of it. You know, it's like, oh wait, you know, explain this. You know, I'm confused. You know, tell me about, you know, how you deal with these situations, or I can't even remember what the conversation was, but it was.
Yeah, I mean, how do you distract someone who's fallen into a cult? You know, but ask them about it, right? Because they'll talk about it for hours. Yeah. You know, it's like CrossFit.
Yep.
So tell me about CrossFit. Is it really, you know? So anyway,
do you enjoy it? Tell me, how does it work out for you? What's your regimen? It's like,
exactly.
Talk for hours.
Yeah, how do you feel? How do you feel since you started Cross? That's the one, boy. You'll get 2 hours of. But he says some interesting things in there about wanting to torture the Klingons.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, as I've said before, my guess is they're holding someone he cares about hostage to make him turn. Mm-hmm. You know, family members.
Well, they certainly
something.
Tortured him while he was in the in captivity. So he's nothing else on the face of it. It's like, he wants revenge for that.
Yeah, absolutely. But Saru offers him a magic stone that I'm sure he bought from the Goop store.
And at least it wasn't shaped like an egg.
The minute he touched it, Saru knew that he was being duplicitous, that he was just trying to delay him because Burnham is out there working on the transmitter trying to send out a signal. So he bolts and...
Bolts and runs, zooms, through the flash.
It was interesting the special effects weren't particularly good of him running.
No.
But he is an awkwardly built character.
Mm-hmm.
So his long legs would look weird running anyway, you know.
Yep.
So.
And I think doesn't he have the weird reverse jointed ankle, kind of like a does he have the reverse jointed knees?
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm. No.
His foot. I guess they just have him in shoes that make it look like his foot goes.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah. I think that he's in shoes that give him a few inches. He's already very tall, the actor, but they make him even taller usually when they're. So he, you know, of course, he can go 48 miles an hour. So he's going to get there in a hurry. Which they, you know, they laid the groundwork for in the opening scene. Right?
Yes.
I could make it in 5 minutes. You know? Gee, I wonder why they told us that.
Yeah.
Why is that gun on the mantle?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So then we cut back to the Ship of the Dead, and Laurel drags the Admiral's form not her body, but her form into some room full of corpses and discovers a lot of her kinsmen are dead.
Yes, kinsmen of the other leaders, and boy, she loses it. It's like,
so are those the leaders of other houses?
I believe that I think it's just they're people that she knows and, you know, honors, whether it's they. I think some of them are leaders of other houses who pledged you know, fealty to Volk or to Cole and Cole. And then they got put out of his misery.
I don't really understand that. I guess we'll get around to it later. Mm-hmm. But it's like, because also when she pledges her fealty to him later, he has her taken away in chains.
Yes.
And, he's not a great leader.
No.
He doesn't inspire loyalty in his men.
No. Well, or not certainly loyalty in other high level competitors. His people seem to be pretty loyal. But anyway, we have a nice scene about, you know, basically Saru gets to the crystal pillar and pretty much violates his peace. his peaceful feelings by attacking things and attacking Burnham. And, you know, Burnham makes a plea, and basically the Pavans, you know, come and intervene. And after Burnham pretty much puts him on stun.
Yeah, it was interesting. They didn't really talk about it at all, but the Pavans were able to transport Tyler to the location almost instantaneously.
Yep.
So that was interesting.
Yeah.
And it also told us something else too, because at the time I thought maybe the Pavans were evil, and that this is how they did stuff, right? Is that they would infect the mind and blah blah blah. But actually, it turns out that Saru had known peace for the first time in his life, and it made him crazy.
Yeah.
So they stop him. The Pavans actually bring Tyler to the situation to stop Saru from attacking.
Yep. Burnham. But Michael Burnham's already got him pretty much.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. She's hit him with a couple of stuns, which is interesting. I kind of made me wonder if there is varying degrees of stun.
Yeah. You know, you got stun one, two, and three. You know.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because either that or, you know, the Kelpians are, like, as some species are, like we know the Klingons, are resistant to the stun
setting
sometimes, right? So there may be a higher, lower stun setting or whatever. But, yeah, he takes a couple of hits and he stays down, but he's not, you know, unconscious like a lot of people who get stunned with a phaser. And there's a really interesting sort of moment when Saru breaks down and he's crying and he says, "You keep taking everything from me," you know. And this is a reference to the fact that he believes that she took Captain Georgiou from him.
And took his opportunity to become a captain.
Right.
You know, to become a first officer, to eventually become a captain. And she was supposed to leave and become a captain so he could become a first officer. And basically, Burnham has always been in his way.
Yeah. So he's, it's pretty obvious why he wasn't happy to see her on board the Discovery.
Yeah.
But also, you know, Lorca is not the captain to be first officer to that is going to open the way to your future career. He's intensely self-centered.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Right, so, yeah.
He is not a Jean-Luc Picard.
No, he's not. And he's not a Georgiou either. He's basically, he's a lunatic, essentially.
Yeah.
And dangerous lunatic. One of the arguments that Saru has is that if the Klingons find out that the Pavans helped the Federation, then they will come and hurt the Pavans. But my feeling was the Klingons hurt everyone they come into contact with.
Yeah.
So they don't need a reason, you know. The way if they discover the Pavans, they will take whatever they want and leave, you know.
They'll take that crystal tower and, you know, do whatever they want with it. Yeah.
Yeah. So Laurel, we cut to Laurel and she, you know, tricks her way into the Cole Clan, gets her red paint, you know. But then immediately he turns on her and has her dragged away.
Right. But just in the nick of time, they get some signal.
Right.
To go to some place where the Discovery is. And we cut back to the Discovery and find out that, the Pavans decided, being the peaceful people that they are, let's invite everybody here and we'll just fix, everybody will settle, you know, everybody will become friends and we'll all be happy. And
So that's going to be interesting. We're going to end up with the Discovery and the Ship of the Dead in the same place
again.
But of course, the Ship of the Dead travels with five other Klingon warships too, so that's not really great. So this is going to be really interesting, and it's, you know, probably one of the reasons that I enjoyed the episode was mostly on the ending, or the fact that the episode sets up a lot of interesting things that are going to happen later.
It does, and based on all these other little things that we touched on, it sets up more than just the obvious sort of, the Klingons are coming, we have to protect the Pavans, what's going to happen. you know, there's going to be a showdown, and the Povans like screwed, well, it's kind of screwed screwed over Discovery, because now Discovery's, you know, they got to stick around. They got, you know, they're sort of bound by their, you know, General Order 1 to, you know, he did first contact, now you got to protect these people. So,
yeah. Yeah, and Lorca's pissed at Burnham. Mm-hmm. Like, she did it. And she's like, she keeps saying, I didn't do this. This is the Povans, the sense of harmony kicking in. They think that they're going to be able to fix this situation.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, like, my feeling would be, well, we know what's inbound, so maybe we should call for backup.
Yeah.
You know, and get as many Federation ships there as possible. And, you know, if you're going to have a shootout, at least be evenly matched.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, and it'll be interesting to see what happens next week.
Yes, it will. Because except not next week, because next week is our...
Oh, right. Next week. Oh, so this is really interesting. So what we're doing next week is we're doing the top 10 science fiction movies that came before Star Wars.
Right. So what do we... Yeah, I have a procedural question here. What before Star Wars mean? Does it
means before 1977.
Okay.
So they have to be released in 76 or earlier.
Okay, great. I got to drop out one or two.
Yeah. I thought this was the difficulty on this was going to be coming up with 10 movies that weren't 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yeah. Oh, there were. Turns out there's a lot of them.
Yes. And so I went through this, like, you know, every, like, best of the 50s, best of the 60s, best of the 70s, and made my list, and I ended up with almost 30 movies, and, you know, for different reasons. And the first thing I thought was, I wish there was a way to do this in a bracket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if we could, but the problem with the bracket is you need to have a criteria for a winner.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We and there's no way for you and I to pick two different movies and come up with one that's better than the other, because it's completely subjective.
Yep.
Right? So so that's what I'm going to kind of do, is just kind of go through each group and winnow them down, because I want one from the 50s at least, one from the 60s, one from the 70s, and then the other seven can be spread anywhere across those three decades.
Yep. But that could be good. Now, we could always delay that for a week if you wanted to find out what happens in this episode, but I'm good either way, so.
Yeah, I'll let you know. I'm really excited about doing this, and I've already started making my list. So my feeling is we either do the top 10, say, on a Wednesday, and then pick up with our regular episode on Sunday, or just go ahead and do it on Sunday.
Okay. I'm good either way. You decide.
You want to do it on Wednesday? You want to do the top 10 on Wednesday?
We'll set up the date offline.
All right, yeah, so that's fine. I mean, if we make the top 10 episodes kind of extracurricular, then that kind of helps not break up, you know, the season stuff. So that would be cool. All right, cool. All right, good. Well, listen, thanks, everybody, for joining us this week. We will talk to you sometime in the near future, at least by Sunday, if not sooner, with our top 10 episode.
Cool.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.